A thing doesn't have to be perfect to be brilliant. Hold on a second, Harlem's happening. Are we? Okay, let's go. Here we go. Welcome to Casually Brilliant, a Zooms with Friends Masterclass podcast series. I'm your host, Ebony Janice. Each week for the next several weeks, I will share casual conversations with some of my closest friends and faves on various topics, including race, faith, healing, mental health, music, the metaphysical world, and anywhere else our casual brilliance takes us in the conversation. Today's special guest is Rachel Cargo. She is absolutely building an intellectual legacy through teaching, storytelling, and critical discourse. I can't wait for you to hear this conversation.
There are people outside my window right now. I don't know how I can show you this. With these white, maybe they're construction workers.
Is it the white churchgoers again? Oh my gosh, I wanted to tell you.
Can you see that across there?
I can't see people.
Men in white. With like these white hazmat looking outfits on.
Maybe there's a person with corona in that building. New York has the highest count, which is so crazy. I wanted to tell you, I was in the shower listening to podcasts.
Okay.
And I heard a wonderful, wonderful piece by a girl, and I'm so sorry, I don't have any references right now, but I'm gonna get them to you. Yes. It was a great piece about those white church tourists.
Mm.
And it was so good. She did a really, really great, it was like an audio, you know, like a like a journal docu-series on NPR. And I'm going to send it to you. And she attended one of the churches and she called out her pastor and she brought him on the show. And it was really, really good.
Good. What did he say?
He was just basically like, you know, sometimes the only way to get this is one of the best ways that we can get the word of Christ out. These people are leaving our church and going all over the world, and who knows what impact we've had.
There ain't been no impact because they stand outside and
I know. And it's
not the will of the Lord for my life. So I don't believe it.
And it's like they let them use cameras and they let them do all, and they say like welcome, and from what this is everything I'm relaying from hearing this podcast, mm-hmm. is that she was saying that like they have a welcome time where all the black congregants like hug the white people and say thank you for coming and all of it was so wild. And so it was just a whole thing about how uncomfortable she was with it.
Something so inappropriate.
Because they just walk out in the middle of service too. It's not like they're coming for the experience. Yeah, it's a very, very, very interesting thing.
It's weird. It's obviously it's not happening right now in these times. But it's very strange to look outside my window in this, what is, you know, really still the hood. And, you know, that's my coffee pot saying, okay, girl, if you didn't get it, you ain't gonna get it.
Your coffee pot is aggressive.
Yeah. Girl, that's canceled. yeah, so look outside my window and what is the hood? You know, Harlem is certainly being aggressively gentrified, and they're definitely coming for this part of Harlem because I live near Lenox Terrace and that's a whole thing. But this where I live is still decidedly like blackety black. And so, but mm-hmm. as a result of that, there are, I think some of the conversation that we don't have about gentrification is the way that the local government contributes to it by kind of freezing out certain areas where you can't get people to move or where people are still holding on or wherever. So the resources just look different here than they look, you know, they just look different. Mm-hmm. So even the response time of the police, you know, if mm-hmm. you call the police, the response time is just different, despite the fact mm-hmm. that the precinct, like, 5 blocks that way and, you know, mm-hmm. 4 blocks that way.
Mm-hmm.
And and then even to see there's a certain part of going towards Lexington where it is very scary over there.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you can see the police just kind of walking around. Like,
yep, they do. They do just walk around.
Like, stuff is happening. And the police, and so, and what I know this to be, I know this both from my own understanding of how gentrification works and also just my spirit, I discern this, that when they come in and tear stuff down or, you know, decide that zoning is changing or whatever, what they're going to say is, well, look at what you've done. You know, look at what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The proof here is da-da-da.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, well, you could have, you know, sent somebody to pick up the trash. You could have sent, you know,
right.
to take the trash to. We don't have that. So
I'm going to take notes on this conversation because I would really, one thing I'd really love to talk to you about, if you have interest, is the way that I cannot stop thinking about how, particularly I've been thinking about the coffee house, my favorite coffee house in Brooklyn called Brooklyn Coffee House on Franklin Avenue.
You better give them that promotion, honey.
they I love them so much, and I promote them forever and ever. So Brooklyn Coffee House, right on, well, it's past Franklin and Eastern Parkway, but it's on Franklin. It's like two blocks up. I can't remember what those other streets are. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a owned by two Black men, and it's, I'm worried about them right now. I'm worried about if they'll be able to stay open. I'm worried about if this incredible landmark of my Brooklyn experience will still be there, you know, after all this is over. And I love to talk about the way that this virus and the economic effects is going to expedite and exacerbate gentrification, because all of these small Black-owned businesses or people of color businesses are going to have to close. And as soon as they board up their windows, these white people who have been sitting on money waiting to buy all these places are going to be buying up all of these Black-owned businesses, and it is going to exacerbate gentrification in so many places. Have you thought about that? I've thought during these last few weeks.
Yeah, of course. You know, as a person who lives in a, you know, super gentrified area that is historically Black, I'm having so many experiences inside of that for myself, because it's Harlem, and what it means as a Black artist to live in Harlem is one thing, and then there is also the tension of living in, the hood, you know, as well, you know, like, because that isn't the, I know that I come across like a thug, but little, you know, situation. So I'm from the rap hood, not the real hood. This is the real hood, and so I'm also maneuvering.
I'm from wherever 2 Chainz is from.
What'd you say?
I'm from wherever 2 Chainz is from.
You're from the opposite.
Me. You know I love him.
You don't know how many ounces in a brick. Sorry, 2 Chainz reference. Anyways, if you know how many ounces, you're gonna have some problems.
I will text you after this call. Ooh, with my conversions.
Anyways, so yeah, so maneuvering like certain portions of my safety, being in this space because I am a single woman. Like maneuvering certain experiences by myself, and you know, so what that means, and that isn't a story that I'm making up. I have obviously had some personal experiences that have caused me to be like, that face is hilarious. That should definitely.
You think you're a hoot? I say you think you're a hoot. I too think you're a hoot. Just for the record.
I was talking to somebody the other day in my DMs that told me that, I know exactly who it was, but I won't say their name. was telling me that I'm one of the funniest people they know. And I was like, telling me I'm funny is my love language. I respond very well to it. What you want?
Just a little practice, I get it.
So thinking about that. But inside of that, though, you know, like the complexity of living in a space that is right on the cusp of, you know, people coming to get it. I'm also, you know, grieving what it means to really lose Harlem, you know, that has been holding on, you know, maybe one of the last spaces really in New York that is really trying to, it's gentrified. Harlem is gentrified, but there are places that are still like,
you can go and still feel safe and seen and like Black.
Yeah. And that's important. And that's the thing, like when people like Shelly show up in comment sections and say, I don't see color, I don't da 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 whatever. First of all, shut the fuck up, Shelly.
I would, when you edit this, can you please put the memes that you created up in the corner?
Shut the fuck up, Shelly. Shelly, I wish I could think of
that. That SpongeBob was so funny.
So yeah, so when that happens, it's like you need to understand what it really feels like as a Black woman, as a person of color, but as a Black woman specifically, to be in a space where you feel safe. And that is the complexity for me being here. I feel very safe and seen here. Mm-hmm. And then also maneuvering, like, what does it mean for the system that's not as clean and as safe and as as it will for other places? Because, we can trouble that. It's Joan Morgan talks about a feminism. She says we need a feminism that's able to fuck with the grays. And ultimately what she's saying is, Black feminists and womanists, we're never saying it's just one thing. We understand that multiple things can exist at one time.
Yeah.
And so we can really love our home and also say, but why aren't there more resources for us to be safer and cleaner and have more access?
Right.
So there's all that. And then inside of that, I'm thinking about like how a Whole Foods can move in and really change the entire dynamics of a mom and pop shop kind of experience of what's going on right here. You know that coffee house that we met at that was Black owned? Remember we met one time? It's closed down, but you have to consider. Yeah, it's closed down.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. Wait, the one we met when I was late that day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do remember that. I thought you meant El Cafe Latte. But yes, I do. Yeah. I did see that had closed before I even left New York. Yes, yeah. Yes, which is so surprised. It hadn't even been open a year and a half.
It's devastating to think that a Black coffee shop can't stay open.
In Harlem.
But if you have a Starbucks on Frederick Douglass and 118th, 125th and Malcolm X, 145th and whoever that is. Like, you have all these Starbucks, all these, other supported, names, then of course, it's like, so definitely thinking about that. And for those of us, because even though we have the privilege of being well in this time, of course, this has impacted both of us in that stuff that, you had it in your mind that was coming. It was canceled and or postponed. And so definitely speaking from a place of privilege of still being able to be, have all the signs on the wall and I'm good and we're gonna be okay. Mm-hmm. But there, when you are a part of gig economy, there also is that, like how are we, my dollars, that I can normally go directly to the types of businesses that I want to spend my money at.
Right.
I'm also now, me and other people in my building, people that I know are now thinking about like, oh, we might have to, choose some spaces that we wouldn't have normally gone to, or we're social distancing and so we can't get on the train and go all the way to Brooklyn or to the Bronx to get the things that we normally got. And because so there's all of that I feel is happening. And I think that the first to suffer always is marginalized people and marginalized identities. Always, always, always the first to suffer. One thing that I will say, conversely though, and then I'll stop this sermon. One thing that I will say though, is that I do feel like we do have the great benefit as well of, you and I grew up in pretty similar experiences. In that we grew up poor and
I can confirm that.
Yeah. Even if I didn't always feel poor.
For sure.
Yeah, we were poor. And, so we grew up poor, Black, in Midwest Ohio, or in Northeast Ohio in the Midwest. And so very white spaces, kind of one of few of, people that look like us in those spaces. and so what does it mean then to be in this moment where the world is in a crisis and we have experienced crisis so so many times. It reminds me of that, I think, Nayir Wahib poem where she says, the world has ended for me many times. Mm-hmm. And it's that, like, what's the balance between taking this very serious and understanding that this will devastate us, and then also advising people to really, not just as a hashtag, I was talking to Candace Simpson about this recently, not just as a hashtag, but as a, like, listen to Black women, because actually listen to them, because yeah. We have had to survive poverty and still be, you know, culture creators and still figure out the balance of knowing what you know and knowing what we know and speaking the multiple languages that we have to speak and creating new dishes because all we had was, you know, ABCDFG and, mm-hmm. You know, creating new hairstyles and creating new businesses and, you know, coming up with the things. So that, but in the center of that for me, because you know that I don't want us to get to the place where we're just still in resistance all day long.
Yep.
I will, you know, quote Thea Monnier with this. This is a imagining the after. Like, if, mm-hmm. if we could, what is our highest imagination of what this could look like for us and for small businesses, particularly those that are Black owned? What is our highest imagination? And so I think, long story short, in my highest imagination, we will... a perfect example of this is the Ethos Club. Did this online situation.
Yeah.
So how do we make sure that we support them so that when this is over, Ethos Club doesn't have to not mm-hmm. exist anymore? It's a very important reality in Brooklyn, and so we need to make sure that we're contributing to those things. And or, you know, even for those of us who do public work. Public academic work, public scholarship work, and the people that have been supporting us that might feel like now is the time to pull back. Like, but also remember that where you exist right now, so much of that education and that knowing came from Rachel.
Yeah.
Figuring out ways to still support those people so that when we come out of this, the ones that have held us together, you know, survived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the things.
Thank you for that. I took some notes. I really would love to write a piece on what the exacerbation of gentrification will look like mm. on the other side of this. And I've been using the term. I'm so excited you told me about Thea's imagine the after, because I've been using a hashtag a lot called. It wasn't like a movement or anything, but I've just been using the hashtag see you on the other side and considering what the other side looks like mm-hmm. for individuals, for collectives, for communities. Mm-hmm. And mostly the second this is over, I will be getting into my brand new Volkswagen mm-hmm. and driving up to Washington, D.C., where I know they'll be brunching the hardest. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'll be to celebrate with Black people us getting out of this. I mean, I love Akron as well, but they don't go as hard as all the people that I love in D.C. or Brooklyn or, you know, or somewhere in New York. So I've just been thinking of all it's such a...
Did you see the video that I posted this morning of the guy saying the day this quarantine is over and my friend's coming to pick me up for brunch? He's like dancing real hard, coming to
it all makes me so happy because I am sitting on edge for the Black joy that I'll get to experience with people on the other side of this. Like, this is unprecedented, and I'm interested in exploring and seeing what this feels like for me and for other people, quote unquote, on the other side. And it's like, we truly, truly have no clue what this is going. We're all stepping out from our homes into a brand new world. Mm-hmm. And that is both terrifying and exhilarating to consider what can be different. Mm-hmm. But like you said, we are so privileged to be well during this time. Mm-hmm. And so we as the well ones have to, I'll speak for myself. I take it upon myself to say, what can I be doing now to ensure that my wellness is transferred in as many ways as possible mm-hmm. to as many people as possible mm-hmm. on the other side of this. And this has come in small ways, like, you know, if I have extra funds that I'm not spending on traveling this month, I'm happy to give it to a friend who mm-hmm. has been working in the restaurant business and isn't mm-hmm. able to get tips this month. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, who are you grocery shopping for? But even who are we promoting us with platforms? Who are we promoting and things like that? How am I writing? What am I spending my time on? All while taking care of our own mental health
and things like that, obviously, which is a whole thing. But
two things about that though, Rachel. I agree. My friend Joel Daniels has been talking about grieving, giving yourself permission.
Yeah, grieving.
And that.
What's that person's name?
Joel Daniels. You know who Joel is. Let me see what his little. That's such a Black woman thing to say. I'm going to add little in front of it. Let me see what.
Yeah, little everything. You know what? That's so funny. I had a, while you're looking up that person's information, I had a friend come over a few weeks ago. We were catching up. We hadn't caught up in a really long time. And he said, out of pure Blackness, so how's your little career going?
What? Your little career?
Excuse me? No. And it was so funny because I knew he didn't mean it condescending at all. It was purely how our conversation was going. But after he said it, he was like, I'm so sorry for who I am as a person.
It's such a, but it also makes me think about, you know, you were talking about this scholar that you were referencing the last time I got my little ashy face on your live, talking about the scholar that's like really breaking down the actual rules of African-American vernacular English and how it
is. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And your little, like, is, there's so, it means so many different things. Mm-hmm. And unless you speak African-American vernacular English,
yes,
that you either, number one, don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Even to identify that it's a thing that happened. That's number one. And then number two, if you don't speak that language, you don't know, you don't understand that tone and inflection also changes what it means.
Yes, yes.
Say, you know, how's your little dog doing? You know,
right.
Like, that's auntie. But if I say, how your little boyfriend doing?
Right. That's a whole other thing. That's a whole
completely different thing.
The conversation has changed.
The conversation has changed. And I might have been challenging you.
Right. Right. That was, yeah, I'm really excited about that. I can't remember her name, and I'm horrible at remembering things today. But so yeah, yeah, I love her.
Joel Daniels is Joel aka MAG on Twitter. But anyways, Joel is just an incredible Black storyteller and cares for us so well. And one of the things that he's talking about is grieving and giving ourselves permission to grieve, whatever it is, for us to grieve as a collective that people are dying, you know,
yeah,
thousands, and to be able to acknowledge that. And then also, if it's a project that you were excited about, like,
there's so much we're grieving. There's so much.
So much. And that it's
friendships, not being able to see each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not a small thing. You have permission to feel sad about that, even, and not even comparing, like, oh, well, I still have my life. Yes, you can practice gratitude,
yeah,
that, but you still have permission to grieve. One of the things that I learned for me is I was kind of feeling like, ooh, you know, I haven't given myself that moment. And for what I will say, though, is that I think that for many of us, and not all of us, but for many of us, we have been grieving already. And so... Mm-hmm. And so this moment definitely may deepen our grief for some of us. But it also may reveal to some of us that we were equipped for this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I think that the past year of talking about dreaming, and then thinking about your hashtag of see you in the after, see you on the other side, and then mm-hmm. Talking about imagining the after. And I've been doing grounding rituals with my students online.
Mm-hmm.
Giving them the opportunity to kind of journal, like, what is your highest imagination? Like, in the best case scenario of this, you know,
what
would that be? And so I feel like I've been doing so much of that intentional work for the past year. Yeah, for the past year now. It's been a full year now. Been doing so much of that intentional work for the past year that my frequency is set to dreaming of the after. My frequency already is set to, I can do two things at one time. I can feel deep grief for what is happening in the world and everything that people are losing, including lives. And I feel very excited about, which is where I'm leaning towards, feel very excited about the possibility that I'll be quoting Thea all the time, but Thea said this in our last conversation too. She said, when people are like, oh no, what are we gonna do? She's like, all of them hashtags about the revolution, did you not think that you were going to have to participate in it at some point?
Right.
I feel like that's where we are to decide that this is an opportunity for us to really reject whatever this bill is that comes back from this government, for us to really passionately, collectively reject the idea that we're just gonna go back to business as usual after this is over.
Yeah.
When this is not just I'm seeing this language and I appreciate this so much because I have been thinking this as well. This isn't, we didn't do this. This is a human crisis.
Right.
People made this way. People that didn't care about the least of these.
Right.
Need to the information and still haven't, you know, we still haven't gone on a country lockdown the way that scientists and doctors have recommended that we do to actually flatten the curve. And you know why we haven't? Because white supremacy is absolutely okay with the idea that the least of these will die.
Yeah, it's written in the business plan.
Period, poo.
Yeah.
That's the actual
the original reason to say that. When it has to do with capitalism.
I want to be on a stage at insert some prestigious organization talking about how white supremacy crafted this experience for us globally. And at the end of my statement, passionately, you know, and the Pew Institute said, da da da.
I value you deeply.
On what? And I want a black woman in the audience to be period. All the white
just people. One. That's all we need. There's usually just one in there, but it's fine.
Just one. You got, they done called me in on accident. She invited me. She took a highlight reel of me being. That's what she submitted to her boss. She got me in there. I got in there talking about people.
That is so funny.
Dream. God, please let that.
That just made me, it made me think that all of us sitting here at home reminds me of, and I guess I'm envisioning my own childhood home, just like sitting on the couch, at the edge of the couch, looking out the window, daydreaming about what we could or would or should be doing. And we've all, and really, now that I think about it, we've all, through the fear, the uncertainty, the panic, the vulnerability, we've all reverted back into these versions of ourselves that both isn't able to cope with what we don't have control over, because we as adults, the trademark of being an adult is having control over something, you know, where you live, where you work, blah, blah, blah. And now that all of that is in limbo, we're all reverting into this very vulnerable version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the plus side of that vulnerable version is that we can sit on the couch, looking out the window, dreaming about what things will look like when we grow up on the other side, what things will look and feel like. And I love being able, I mean, you and I are pretty big dreamers, so I think you and I are sitting around daydreaming all day, every day anyways, but for other people who hadn't had a chance to just sit and imagine, because they're just existing, existing. Yeah. Sit and imagine. And what there was a time when I was talking to Shay, and he was telling me, he was like, wow, Rachel, you dream so much. Like, you don't do anything but sit there and say, this might be possible. And then you go and see it if it is. Mm-hmm. And that really is how it exists in the world. And for people who don't know, Shay Kill McLean is a trans black man who does race work. And his, through that particular lens that he has, he would express to me often that he never had the chance to dream. Like, dreaming wasn't even an option. Like, he was just surviving. Mm-hmm. And so for me, like, the ultimate dreamer, I have journal entries talking about what would it be like when I'm 30 and blah, blah, blah. Like, this is all I've ever done, and recognizing the privilege in dreaming, mm-hmm. and how we're all, ooh, we need to make dreaming more accessible, which is the work you've been doing.
I want to say that this work is womanist in its existence.
Yeah.
because thinking about what Alice Walker said about committed to the survival and wholeness of entire people, not a separatist, except periodically for health. And that is womanist work. I can, even without having the language of womanism, I can think about my grandmother in the way that at some point, both of my grandmothers, because I tend to talk about Emma Jane Baxley, but in honoring my dad's mother more, who I didn't have as close of a relationship with, but in honoring my dad's mother more, in this current season of my life, I think about the fact that both of my grandmothers had, at some point of the day, disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Where did they go? Mm-hmm. I know they went to their bedrooms, mm-hmm. but like, mm-hmm. how you just vanish, you know?
No conversation, no goodbye, nothing.
That's it, I'm done.
Yeah. I'm out. All right. They were the original.
All right.
I'm gonna head out.
All right. I'm gonna head out. Yeah. All right.
But they didn't even tell us. They didn't even tell us though.
Didn't even say goodbye. Just this day is over. Take care. So the way that my grandmothers would disappear, though, I also have a very conscious memory of my mother's mother disappearing into her room to read and to write, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, always scribbling about something, always, you know, studying, always mm-hmm. Just having this private world to herself. And I didn't have the language for that when I was a child, but the more I do my own dreaming work, mm-hmm. creating my daily rituals, mm-hmm. creating mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. life will look and feel mm-hmm. like, the more I think about my grandmother woke up very early in the morning, got up and mm-hmm. went and got in the shower.
Yeah.
Came back through the living room with a towel, drawing more attention to herself than she needed to. Girl,
this wow, that's a, wow, that sounds like someone I know.
And then she would get dressed, do whatever else she was doing back there, go into the kitchen, make a pot of coffee or get her some water, and then come sit and look out the window for a little bit, gossip on the phone with her girlfriends. And this was a daily ritual for years of my life. You know, I knew my grandmother in this form for 30 plus years. That was a ritual for as long as she could get up and be about. And I didn't have the language of dreaming at the time, but I know that's what she was imagining. She was dreaming. She was creating space for herself to be able to breathe and to think about, and what do I want to do and how else do I want to feel? Mm-hmm. And I know that very similarly for my dad's mother, she would disappear into that bedroom and back there reading or just sitting in silence, because she was just a very quiet anyways. And that is with dreaming. One of the things that I'm asking us to do is to, at the very least, give ourselves 5 minutes, which feels like a lot to some people. Mm-mm, girl, I got all these kids. Well, first of all, mm-hmm. you have all them bad tail kids. Now that they're
here. Right.
Now that they're here, you know, can you get 5 minutes? Can you teach your children? I'm saying this, I'm done. My godson, my oldest godson, there was a point when I had alarms going off on my phone. I was super, super saved. God bless my ministry. I had alarms going off on my phone, and it would be like, this is my call to prayer.
Uh-huh.
And, so I would be praying. And there was a point when an alarm would go off, and if my godson were with me, he'd be like, it's time to pray. And I had trained him to know that this time belongs to this very
spirit. Right. So
how do we invite our family into knowing, like,
fine. Oh, well, that, you know what, two things. One, I really appreciate you bringing that up about our grandmother's routines, because my grandmother, La Crania, who's 95 now, there's two things that brought
to say my grandmother, like, that's not my grandmother.
at her home, she would, before she moved in with my uncle, she would, you know, no one ever slept in grandma's bed, ever. Like, it wasn't an option to sleep in grandma's bed. Like, you didn't even know what her bed felt like. Like, you don't know what she's sleeping on. Like, grandma never shared her bed. And that was such a vision of me seeing hard boundaries set. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason. Nobody's getting hurt if somebody goes on grandma's bed. It's just what grandma wanted. And everyone had to listen to it. And the other thing was her You know, her mornings were so, now that I think about it, I'm a morning person. I wake up at 6. I have a whole routine that I do. I wake up, I water my plants, I feed my dog, I turn on jazz, I listen to NPR, and I put on my robe and sit on my balcony. Like, I have a routine that makes me feel beautiful, makes me feel whole, and makes me feel ready. Actually, during this quarantine, during the days when I literally feel like I cannot get out of bed, I say, okay, you don't have to do anything but get through your morning routine. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of snowballs me into doing other things than I need to be doing. But so thinking about grandma, I'm really going to reach out to her and talk to her about what those times were. Like, why was her bed so sacred? Mm-hmm. And why had she six kids and dozens and dozens of grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, I have kids. That's not an excuse for teaching them how these boundaries are set, and they will survive and thrive.
Yeah. At least can I have one thing for myself? When you talked about your grandmother's bed, it made me think about my grandmother had a different water pitcher than the rest of us. And growing up, it was like, this is selfish.
Because don't touch my water.
and it almost makes me feel like, Rachel, it wasn't about anything, but I got all these kids, these children. Can I have one?
I deserve something else. Can I have one thing?
Just the water pitcher.
Like, what is sacred? How we create nothing sacred until we say it so, and we make people we like demand. But it also made me think about how I've been teaching highest values lately. Mm-hmm. And how our grandmothers, in that, they were very clear on their highest values. Mm-hmm. And they drew that line in such a loving way to mm-hmm. say, you know, you're not going to be in my house if you're about to be disrespecting my very simple rules, like don't drink out of my water filter. I didn't ask you to do 3 cartwheels and dunk a basketball in order to eat dinner. Just leave my water alone. And mm-hmm. that's so funny. I value that so much, and I'm gonna be in conversation mm-hmm. about that.
That's so good. Thank you for I was saying this is committed to survival womanism. Womanism actually is, it's again that not a separatist except periodically for times of health. And very often what happens with womanist work, even if you're not identifying with that specific language, is that when we retreat, look at Beyonce, it's a perfect example of this, Lemonade. What happened with Lemonade, what we see in this visual album, is that there is no point where the women aren't surrounding her. Where the in fact what we can decipher, if there is a sacred messaging, if there's scripture that she's teaching us through these visuals, is that the women will heal me. Like mm-hmm. community, thinking about like she on a bus with all the girls. Uh-huh. Thinking about in Six Inch Heels, she's in that room and all the girls are around, she twirling that mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. whatever. Thinking about at the end in those transitional periods, or freedom, where they're preparing food together and sitting down and eating together, and which is very much a Black traditional organizing. Yeah. Like you have food, uh-huh. you take care of one another in that time, and then you talk about like, okay, where do we go from here? And so even when we pull that, not a separatist except periodically for health, when Black women are asking for Black women specific and, you know, exclusive spaces, it's not because we're separatists, because we share everything.
Even it's for health, it's for our health.
Even this Zooms with friends is the proof of the fact that Black women share everything, because what happened is I was realizing that as an archivist, as an anthropologist, as somebody who's always taking notes and trying to keep our stories documented and, you know, writing the things down and taking the pictures and trying to keep those memories for my children and or, you know, for my nephews, for my nieces, for the generations to come, I recognize that this also is a time where Black women do have a deep well of wisdom and knowledge and something to contribute. And here we be on these phone calls, just talking to each other, saving each other's lives over and over mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. And what little nuggets, what pieces of wisdom. We've been talking for what, like 30 minutes, 40 minutes at this point, officially. And mm-hmm. in the past 30 minutes, literally, Rachel, we probably talked about 7 different topics.
Mm-hmm. And I got a whole page of notes.
If nothing else, me with my notes. Else you could walk away from this one conversation with tools for dreaming, thoughts about how gentrification is going to impact your local small Black businesses. You could walk away from this conversation thinking about what it looks like to twerk. Did I twerk yet?
You pussy popped a little bit earlier, but it's okay.
Thank you. God bless you. about what community looks like, thinking about what safety looks like, thinking about making listening to Black women more than a hashtag, like all of these, thinking about Black joy, you know, in the after, thinking about imagining, thinking about dreaming. And it's a casual conversation because that's what we do. We just like retreat into that casual, those casual moments where we can be ourselves and, you know, let our hair down. And even the fact that I always schedule these calls with like a couple minutes before or after to talk about the things that do need to be separate, that can't be public because they sustain us and or they're just between us and or it's language that we would have to translate if we talk on camera. It's like, that is womanist work. And I think that while other people that are not Black women can't call themselves womanist, you can learn from the womanist. You can learn from womanist about what it looks like to deepen community and ensure that we don't, even though we're social distancing, ensure that we don't miss out on the opportunity to know and love each other deeper and to see each other and to honor each other and to like, how your dog doing? How your mama doing? How, you know, you need me to send you some conditioner, you know, you, or tell me what you using on your face, your skin looking good, or, you know, whatever, like those moments that we just get to touch base and be human, and be, you know, be ourselves for a minute. It's such important. I was saying this, I'm done with that. I remember I had did this workshop for San Francisco Boys and Girls Club several years ago with their employees, the people who work with the directly with the children. And I was saying, I was helping them to understand that their work with the children is social justice work, like that specific language. And what I was helping them to realize, because it's a lot of Black and brown people, obviously in San Francisco, that's working on the ground with the kids, it's, you know, a lot of Black and brown people, is the thing is that white supremacy will even gentrify social justice work. It will, but we haven't called it our work historically. We have called it our ministry. We've called it our purpose. We've called it our responsibility. And so until we recognize, I will quote Rachel Cargill. I heard Rachel Cargill in this interview, Black Girl in Ohm. And she was
talking, that was a good interview. That was one of my favorite things I've ever done.
Such a dope interview. Rachel, look, I'm still talking to you like I'm not talking.
And I'm responding like I was like, that was a dope podcast.
I enjoyed that interview.
We are so stupid.
But Rachel was talking about how one of the things that she's had to do, she read this book and she's had to think about what is my work, especially because she doesn't work. You don't work for anybody. I can keep saying she talking to you. not working for anybody. And so the guilt around like, am I not doing enough? Should I be doing more? And so making a list of, these are the things that I do every day. If that's just researching something for social media, that's a part of my job description. And so I think right now, particularly in these times, but hopefully onward, what we'll do is we'll start thinking about the way that we exist. Things that seem very small on a daily basis, I call to check on my parents. And that is a part of my work. I cannot exist or function. We won't be able to be whole people if every day I don't make sure I check on my parents. So include that as a part of your work, and so that you don't feel separate from, like, you don't feel like, oh, I should be doing more. No, you had called and did a whole wellness check.
Right.
Have you visited thefreepeopleproject.com lately? I recently launched a new program called the Dream Yourself Free Masterclass Intensive. It is a 6-month healing program that is going to support you in the areas of intergenerational healing, ritual building, shifting money and blueprint success, writing ourselves free, and so much more. Again, thefreepeopleproject.com. Click on the option that says Dream Yourself Free.
That is so important right now, and I'm interested to hear from you. I'll share my experience and then I'd love to hear from you. So one of the things that has been coming up for me during this social isolation is sustainability. Obviously there's like the the scariness of not having enough, from what's in the grocery store to time to money and things like that. And this has wildly ramped my awareness of how I am sustainable within my household. Like, I have been taking such great joy in finishing the food that I bought. Like, I have a mini celebration. I have a Polaroid camera, and I've been taking photos of, the way that I've been documenting my experience, I've been taking photos of empty containers to remind myself that I am showing up as much as possible. I'm showing up empty. I've given all of myself in a way that matters. Mm-hmm. And so I have, from a chapstick tube to my oil spray that I use on my body to, you know, eating all of the applesauce that I bought to, you know, like, really just seeing how am I really experiencing life. And it has also affected my time management, like waking up in the morning and saying, I have nothing to do except what I feel needs to be done. And sometimes that's work, sometimes that's writing, and sometimes it's just talking on the phone with friends and redefining what is work for me. Mm-hmm. And yeah. what gives me wholeness, and mm-hmm. and just the concept of sustainability, and like seeing how I'm using things, what I need to buy, what I don't need to buy. You know, even my dog, like, I celebrated when we finished his box of food, because it's like we have done all we could to offer a little bit of goodness, and having those mini celebrations of sustainability has been making me proud of myself and pushing me into this new level of awareness about how I exist in the world. And I love matching that with saying, you know, your work is social justice work, and how we've really been redefining the phrase, you know, essential workers, mm-hmm. thinking about that a grocery store's worker is essential, that the person at the gas station is essential. Mm-hmm. And so that shift is blowing my mind in the way that we need to have a collective conversation of redefining and reimagining these things. And I for one have redefined my place in and my understanding of sustainability, because it has reminded me the role that I play on earth is far past my work. It's finishing the dog food all the way. It's finishing that salad, that thing of, I've been eating breakfast salads. I've been eating salads for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which it brings me joy because I need to finish it before it goes bad. And it's not a burden to me. Like it might've been a few weeks ago. Like, damn, why do I got, let me go ahead and head to Chipotle. No, it is my joy to show up and remain sustainable in a space where, in an earth that I'm so grateful for, but also as part of a community, because me finishing that salad without throwing it away is my social justice work as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to that rant. I've been thinking about it. You're the first person I've expressed that to.
I think what you said about all the things, it's also understanding that that is a major part of what your responsibility is in this moment, because there's I really should just, when I post this, take a picture and post Thea's face over mine, since I'm
but you're colder again.
She's talking recently about sustainability, not sustainability, uh-huh. about stewardship.
Yes, which is such a, mm-hmm. it's such a biblical term.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, okay, keep talking, I'm sorry.
Yeah, like we have to be good stewards over what we've been given.
Oh, I saw that in her children hanging the herbs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. About like, what does it look like? I had another girlfriend, Maureen Benson, sent me this. I'll send it to you actually, because you've been doing your readings for children. And mm-hmm. it's a document on how kids can start a in-home garden right now, and how they can participate. And okay, so think about those few little things. Again, like when we understand those things, like putting that document together, or doing the work of kind of being the prophets, being ministers, being people who are using our voice and the wisdom that God has given us, or our experience to heal and or to support other people's healing. things that seem, in the big scheme of things, they seem very small, but they're absolutely are responsible. Yesterday, talking to Mo Brown, she's talking about Audre Lorde's, what Audre Lorde says about poetry is not a luxury. And so knowing that the artists right now are, you know, so essential because the artists are going to tell the truth even when everybody else starts to lean into revisionist history in the moment.
Yeah.
If we're experiencing right. that in the moment, people making up other versions of what's happening.
Right.
So all that to say, I'm thinking about, as we are good students, it's also important for us to be very clear about what is happening. You said that we're redefining or re-understanding what it means to be an essential worker. People who we cannot survive without. Even in a global pandemic, you still gotta go to work. We would die. If the grocery stores close down, what we gonna do? We need you to be there to stock the shelf, to do. And we have so grossly undervalued that, which is socialized, which is colonized.
What holds value?
Yes, that is absolutely, because certainly in different tribal experiences, the people who healed, the people who brought the food, they were valued. They were
the kings. They were the kings. Yeah, they literally were respect. You know, when I was in West, that's so funny. When I was in West Africa, I went to this this museum in the Ivory Coast. It was the old house of the man who colonized, which who knows why we were walking through there, but we'll talk about that later. But there was an educational thing showing different parts of the community, like different leaders of the community, and one is a woman who had a wooden dildo hanging off of her waist, and she was the sex educator. And it was so interesting because I was talking, I have the group that I went to West Africa with, we have a group chat, and we said, you know, y'all, if we get out of this pandemic and we can all fly back to West Africa, what role would you play in the community? How would you show up? We had a whole group chat about what we would do. And I said, I would write the local newspaper. And another friend is an educator, and she said she would build the school system. Another friend is an artist and said they would ensure that everyone had a platform. And we just were going through, there was 20 of us in this group, and we were going through what we would do with our our community if we were able to build something. And it was so funny because one of my friends who's a lawyer, her name is Salim, she's an incredible educator as well. Salim said she was going to be walking around with a wooden dick out here to let people know about sex education. But how that, like, we had to decide, like, us imagining what this could look like was us really saying what is our idea of essential workers,
necessary.
And us all, like, it was just an incredible conversation. But anyways,
I think that's beautiful. I appreciate that so much, because all of this is dreaming ourselves free, thinking about thinking about what's on the other side. I want to say that because my hope is that as we are I don't necessarily think we're redefining. I think we're remembering. As we're remembering what is essential, we are given the opportunity to lead this experience and either go back to business as usual, which unfortunately is a thing that we have historically done way too many times in the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. We have done it way too many times. Mm-hmm. We go back to business as usual. It's just a part of the makeup of who we are, like forgetting. We're so forgetful. Mm-hmm. I remember when Michael Brown was murdered and that baby was laying like roadkill in the street for hours and did not follow basic protocol for even what to do with his body. And, or call the rescue. Whatever. And I thought, this is it. We'll never be the same after this. And in so many ways, things have drastically changed. We see that Ferguson really created a new movement or a new way that we were doing movement and work and all of those.
Yeah.
I don't want to minimize all of the change that has been made and all the work that people have been doing and the educators that came out of that and the new, you know, photographers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But what I will say is that it wasn't the it wasn't the revolution that I thought we would experience after.
Yeah.
And there's that one example, but there are so many examples.
There's so many times that we're just like
we all wore black and then we all went back to.
Right. There's, yeah.
We didn't all go back to, that's not true. But collectively, where you thought there was this moment of the world saying, this is real.
Yeah, well, capitalism, it's like, I don't know, I'd love to develop or consider some type of metaphor of what it looks like when we're constantly like chipping away or something's continuously exposed, but somehow it's like capitalism has some fucking feeling. It has like, you know, in like a Marvel movie where the villain gets shot, but all of a sudden it heals over real fast and we're like, what the fuck? Like, there's no way. Mm-hmm. Like, how are we still doing this? And we need to figure out the kryptonite to kill it.
I appreciate you so much, Rachel. I'm so proud of you and grateful for your work, especially, I'm gonna say grateful for your work. I'm grateful for you in your ability to, you know, show up even in these moments and hold space for people to be doing healing work and also thinking about their complicity in, you know, the ways that systems keep us all oppressed because we're not free if we're all not free. And so thank you for your afro. Thank you for your thoughtfulness. Thank you. You on the low.
I'm so happy. I really needed this. I really needed you. I think we just naturally need each other often. But I'm going to pull from so much of this to hopefully write a little bit more about this new this exacerbated gentrification that's happening. I can't wait to talk to my grandmother about this conversation. I can't wait to talk to all of, I'm giving a summary for everybody who's looking for action items out of this. I can't wait to talk to my grandmother. I can't wait to continue to look at stewardship and sustainability. And I'm really gonna dive into that because it's really heavy on my heart right now with everything that's going on. I also am so excited. You gave me so many names of people to learn from and look into. I am launching something very soon called The Great Unlearn. And it's a learning, it's just a space for people to come and say, like, what the hell were we taught and how did we not recognize the truth? Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about it. And I'm going to use a lot of the theory that came out of this conversation of questioning, reimagining, remembering, mm-hmm. And things like that in it. And I'm just so grateful to exist in a space with people, especially me with my deep, deep imposter syndrome that comes up every time, all the time. But I'm just so grateful to exist closely with people like you, Mo, Thea, a whole bunch of Black women who, think big and who think in big ways and do meaningful work in small ways. Like that intersection of like, I am a genius, but I also am about to show up on a 10-minute call with you to remind you that twerking is necessary for survival. Like those types of big thinkers and small actors, I will never get over it. I'll never be over how meaningful it is.
Me too, also same. I know we're transitioning into our goodbye because I want to let you get to what you're getting to. But I wanted to lift one more name just in this space.
Yes.
Because we talked about so many things.
Yes.
I want to lift the name of J.T. Perry, who I talk about her all the time in my space. So you may have.
Yes.
I think you may even be following her already. It's possible. But
yes, I am.
J.T. Perry is doing very important work around before this moment. Chronic illness and disability, and is a queer Black theologian, all the things. But the reason why I want to lift Jade is because in these times, we are thinking about the ways that we have been disabled by.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
And we're making the coronavirus a very ableist discussion.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because it's still not acknowledging your own complicity in disabling.
Yes.
people who are not able-bodied and experiencing chronic illness in different ways. And so I feel like it's important for us to, like, even as we're talking about this more in our healing and our and all the things that we're doing, to not only look to the people who are realities on an ongoing basis, but also to acknowledge, just if, even just for a moment, to like take a deep breath with them about how infuriating, as a Black woman, I got that in this moment, but how infuriating it must be.
Yeah.
It absolutely is for them, but how infuriating it must be for so many of them to be like, really?
Like, yeah, right. Like, really, I could have been working from home this whole time and not been in pain. I could have, I totally agree with you. And I wrote, I did a little post on it, and it's so, so critical to think about that. And one thing that I've been thinking about a lot in that vein is the language we've been using around this. Mm-hmm. And it's a very common biblical language that we have used here, thinking like the least of us, thinking about the critical workers, but like, they're literally not the least. Like, period. I don't, like, why are we using that term least? Like,
well, that's the thing though about the language of disability though, because at some point there were people saying, no, let's call them differently abled, but disability activists were like, no, we are being disabled.
Yes. And it's not, the disability isn't because of them, it's because of us.
Yeah, yeah, it's because of us that it's
right,
not
born.
It's the reason for you. Or maybe I was born with a certain experience. And so now, like, we need to feel sorry for me. No, we need to understand that our privilege forces us to lean in the direction of those who are able-bodied, which means that you never thought about people who were disabled, which means that you have undervalued them, which means that you made them and see them as the least of these. And so when we think of that, when we use that language, I do, thank you so much for that. I do think it's important for us to acknowledge that, like, the same way I'm saying disability, people have been disabled and people have been made the least.
Right. So I wrote, the disability is not a lack of their ability to show up. It's us not giving them ability.
Period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. New York City. New York City.
Right. When I lived in DC, if people don't know, my mother has polio and she's been on crutches my whole life. She's in a wheelchair now. But New York, if Uber hadn't existed where she could roll her wheelchair up into a thing, my mom would have never come to New York. It's very, even in Brooklyn where I used to nanny in downtown Brooklyn, I used to walk around, and I have a heightened awareness because I had to always consider my mom's accessibility anywhere I went. And so it's like natural for me to look and be like, wow, this really isn't accessible. Like, my mom can never come here. Downtown Brooklyn, the streets of like Livingston, near Atlantic, Giralamon Street, they do not have off ramps from the sidewalks. Like, how? And this is like a bustling area where like the grocery store is.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, and I'm gonna end this recording. Let me put my finger on the stop record. The last thing that I'm gonna say, this is how we gonna go out, is we have participated. Even those of us who are doing this, mm-hmm. we have participated, and that's on period.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very, 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 very true.
So it's a.
And I think that's why this whole sustainability thing is getting to me, because I'm like, who did I think I was? Who did I think that I was to not be deeply considerate of how I'm existing in the world materially?
Taking up space. Yeah.
Yeah, like materially, mm-hmm. and how much was I missing on by not indulging deeply mm-hmm. in what I had? And even looking around my apartment now, which I adore my apartment, I got to get new furniture, you know, like I have all this stuff. And while I was buying, like, even then I was thinking a little bit like, I don't want to have anything else besides this stuff for a very long time mm-hmm. because I don't want to be out here just buying up stuff, which is such, are we off recording?
No, I can
stop. Okay, I'm not. I was gonna say something, but I'm not gonna say what I was gonna say.
Okay, so,
but
mind your business. That's the end. Be good.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Casually Brilliant, a Zooms with Friends masterclass podcast series with Ebony Janice. A new episode drops every Wednesday at thefreepeopleproject.com. Just click on the Casually Brilliant tab and get ready to be casually brilliant with me. Until next time. To support my work, you can subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/EbonyJanice. Subscribers at the $50 or more level get access to all content plus enrollment in my BGM Institute courses, on Beyonce and African Spirit Justice and my course on Hip Hop as Liberation Theology. Plus, I have more courses being added in the coming months. Each course is an 8 to 10 week curriculum with a video lecture, and all supplemental materials are provided. Again, you can visit patreon.com/EbonyJanice to subscribe.